Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone. Happy Friday. This is the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, just to prove to those who were not very kind to you earlier this week, and many others, that we don't play favorites in the Republican presidential field, our good martini today is devoted to the very strong and impressive comments of former House Speaker Newt Gingrich. This is not an endorsement of Newt Gingrich, nor is it a non-endorsement of Newt Gingrich. He simply said some words that we like, and we'd like to play them for you. So we just
Rhino!
Force of habit, I know. Here's Newt Gingrich and a couple different clips as he visited with Sean Hannity on Fox News. The first one, pretty simple, and I think whether he's the nominee or anybody else should make this point a lot in the general election.
You can either be incompetent or radical, but if you're both incompetent and radical, it's probably more than the system can bear.
Is that what you see now in him?
Absolutely.
But Gingrich wasn't done yet. He also talked about the question of whether he would be one to move towards the middle should he win the nomination, whether that was the way to win a general election. And Newt had a very good response there, too.
If you get a real contrast in a country which is more than 2-to-1 conservative, the liberal loses. But you have to have the courage to fight your way through the New York Times and through CBS News and through MSNBC and be steady in drawing the contrast. So I think the person who is able to debate Obama and draw a sharp and defined contrast has an enormous advantage. I don't think you go to the middle. You bring the middle to you.
And that is certainly music to the ears of many conservatives, some still unclear as to whether they think Gingrich is the best conservative in the race. Some clearly do. If you look at recent polls, he's now up nationally by about 20 points on Mitt Romney, and he's closing the gap to some extent in New Hampshire. But, Jim, I think he's distilled things pretty well. Obama is, for the most part, on a lot of critical issues, incompetent and radical. And the best way, as Reagan proved and other conservatives have in states like Pennsylvania with Pat Toomey in 2010 and some other places where conservatives have won in relatively purple states, if you can get the middle to come to you, it shows that principles do matter to people who might not share every one of them.
Yeah, I think that whether or not you're a fan of Newt Gingrich, this is the message that the Republican nominee has to carry. I mean, one or the other, I don't think will be enough. I think the base will be quite satisfied with the Obama is a radical one message, and there's a heck of a lot to emphasize that. I remember seeing, I think it was John King of all people, in the green room at CNN back in March or April of 2009, when Obama had first proposed eliminating or greatly reducing the charitable deduction for high-income earners. And King, who by, a straight newsman who does not, is by no means a conservative, one of us, was saying, if Obama had run on, I'm going to really crack down on charitable deductions, he would not have been elected. And I think there was a lot of that stuff in terms of Obama. You can look at that stuff. You can look at the Van Jones types who end up in his cabinet. You can talk about how he's punted on the super committee. There's all that. But also, I think for the center, even the folks who are kind of politically wishy-washy or who may not be 100% on board with the conservative vision for government, you also have to make the argument that, look, Obama is not competent. That's what we've seen. We've seen this constant voting present. We've seen this constant belief that, he can kind of wing it and leave the details of policy to Nancy Pelosi. And that, I think if you look at the way that, sometimes the Michael Bloombergs of the world work, or even thinking, I'm hearing, some interesting things about Rahm Emanuel out in Chicago. These guys are liberals. Let's not fool ourselves. But at least they get their cities to function reasonably well. I mean, if Michael Bloomberg were a catastrophic failure as mayor of New York City, he would have been voted out of office. Even his bazillions and bazillions of dollars and, the couple hundred bucks a vote he spends wouldn't be able to save him. I think John Corzine is probably a good example of that. You have to at least do your job. And, there are certain times where when Obama goes off on the golf course, even Tina Brown is saying he doesn't seem to be that interested in the job. So disconnected, out of touch, not understanding what makes America what it is, embracing the politics of envy by the young snot-nosed punks in the Occupy Wall. I mean, this is a target-rich environment. And, for all my criticism of Gingrich and what I call this intellectual ADD, this is a target-rich environment. And the Republican nominee has to lay this out because the stage is being set for a really comprehensive, decisive victory for conservatism come November 2012 if we do this right. And, We've been known to not get it right from time to time, Greg.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the case. You mentioned Obama's job, jobs being another major issue today, as the Labor Department reports on what happened with the job picture in November. Overall, right on target with the number of jobs expected, 120,000 net jobs created. That's not enough to keep pace with the number of people entering the job market, yet somehow the rate went down overall from 9.0 to 8.6%. And that somehow can be interpreted by 315,000 people giving up on any effort towards a job search. And even with that number of people exiting the labor force, somehow the U6 rate, the one that factors in people who work part-time and wish they were working full-time and people who have quit looking, also went down from 16.2 to 15.6. Not really sure how that happened, but clearly all of this didn't go down because of 120,000 new jobs. We're glad it's positive, but job creation is not the reason this seems to be headed in the right direction. It's because of a limiting pool. Once again, Jim Garrity and his toy demonstration would perfectly explain this.
It does. And so I have that up on Campaign Spot. It's kind of old. I just realized that's from, like, you know, early 2010. And the points made in that video are still very relevant, which is that, you know, discouraged workers are not counted in the official unemployment rate. So if people stop looking for work after a certain amount of time, they just drop out of that number. I think I like the way James Pethikakis, who's now at AEI, characterized it, saying, look, you know, this job report is an improvement, but it's still terrible. If 120,000 net jobs have been created, that's nice. That's actually the sort of thing we wanted to see, and maybe even bigger after a recession. But look, 315,000 people leaving the workforce, either we're having mass alien abductions, or you're seeing people, you know, give up and not choose not to work anymore. They could be taking early retirement. They could be, conceivably, they could be going back to school. But I don't think we're, you know, November is a strange month to suddenly, you know, enlist, you know, go to college or something. What I have been writing about, and I think you're going to see more of this on Campaign Spot, is this phenomenon of the off-the-books economy, that things are so bad. And it's a certain argument that this is what happens with Obama regulations and various state regulations. The process of hiring someone becomes so tiring and frustrating, so much red tape and, you know, and time-consuming for employers, that they just do it for cash under the table, which is kind of the you know, almost the dominant MO, the way things are done over in Greece. And it is a very bad setup, I would argue. It is a bad setup for employees who end up having no real legal rights. It is a bad setup for the government because they lose out on the tax revenue. It is a bad setup for the rule of law because everybody ends up being kind of complicit in this conspiracy of silence about illegal activities. And I think in the long term, it's not good for employers to be paying their employees under the table with cash and in this, you know, very day-to-day tenuous thing. I think you'd rather have good, dedicated, loyal employees who are doing their best and are happy to come in, you know, first thing in the morning and you know, really kick butt for your company. So I think this is an ominous report. It's kind of interesting that's already being spun as a good development. I think this is one of those cases where, look, you try to spin things, but people know whether they have jobs or not. And they know whether they've got an on-the-books job or an off-the-books job. And if they're just trying to make ends meet an off-the-books job, they're not going to believe all the talk that, you know, happy days are here again.
Jim, I think that's pretty much spot on. And unfortunately, I think we'll see the president crowing about it today, and he'll probably crow about it even more if all these different factors combine to bring the rate down artificially as we get closer and closer to the election. If it were actually improving the economy and the job picture, we'd all be happy about that because we want that to improve regardless of the political calendar. But unfortunately, it's kind of a mirage right now, and that's the worst possible combination of things. We mentioned a little bit earlier in our Good Martini that Newt Gingrich kind of drew the distinction of what this 2012 election needs to be all about. Unfortunately, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the Democratic National Committee chairwoman and radical congresswoman from Florida, has decided that the only reason the Republicans might win in 2012 is because they're rigging elections. I kid you not, this is back to something we've talked about earlier in the year about Republicans in many states, legislatures, demanding that people actually prove who they are at the polls by presenting a photo ID.
What they're doing is trying to make sure that because they can't win an election on the merits, they're trying to rig these elections by ensuring the people who will go to the polls and vote for Democrats can't get there.
It's the jazzy house band over at MSNBC that was playing underneath that entire interview between her and Martin Bashir earlier this week. She also made the point, Jim, that in some states like Texas, all photo IDs are not created equal because kids with student IDs from universities, that's not treated the same as a gun license issued by the state. And then she goes on to talk about how 20% of minorities don't have a photo ID. Is it really that hard to get a driver's license in this country?
You know, there are some small segments of the population that do not have a photo ID. If you are told far enough in advance, you've got to get a government-issued photo ID. The real question is not who doesn't have one. It's that who is utterly incapable of getting one,
right.
Of not getting one. And I have a very hard time, you know, thinking of it. I suppose if you're laid up in the hospital in some sort of ICU unit or something, you might not be able to get down to the DMV. But it's one of those things where in the really hard cases, I would be willing to let, you know, judges and election authorities work that stuff out. I think in a general principle, it is good that you should have to prove you are who you say you are and you live where you say you live. In order to vote in this country, we've had people who are snowbirds in Florida voting in two places in New York and Florida. Voter fraud does exist. People do try to work around the systems. And it was Arthur Davis who had run for governor, I want to say down in Alabama. He was a Democrat House member. It was kind of a new Democrat, African-American guy, kind of an interesting guy who might sometimes deviated from the Liberal Party line every now and then. And he said the biggest advocates of voter fraud are the old Democratic machines at the local level. It's interesting. It's not necessarily the DNC in his mind or some sort of vast conspiracy run by Soros, but by the local political machines, the ones who have no problem stuffing ballot boxes and filling. You know, we saw in Indiana there was some local official who had filled out signatures to get Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama on the ballot. And, you know, the signatures were all written by one guy. That's a little bit different from the photo ID issue, but there are people who want to cheat at elections. The Democrats do not want to institute this fairly basic method to make sure that, you know, someone, you know, does not try to vote twice. Well, gee whiz, if somebody, you know, I sound like Romney when I say that. Gosh, golly fiddlesticks. If somebody ends up, you know, voting twice, that means your vote and my vote and everybody else's vote has been halved in value. And what's more, when they actually talked to these people who ended up voting twice, people who had, you know, had a summer home in Florida or whatever, or a winter home in Florida, and they lived up in New York, and they said, why did you do this? Why did you think it was okay to vote in two states? This person said, but look, the other side cheats all the time. So once you end up with the perception that the other, you know, that voter fraud is common, you start tearing away at the mentality that it shouldn't be done, and vote in following the rules, following the law, and voting once, you feel like a chump. So, I mean, if you want to destroy democracy, let's keep, you know, voter ID away from the polls. Let's make sure, you know, let's eliminate rules like that. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is very revealing. Look, I understand she's DNC chair, et cetera, but she's basically arguing something I had seen in, you know, from Democrats and really the last couple of presidential cycles, that if the Republicans win, it must be illegitimate.
Yeah, that's
exactly
right.
In their minds, it is not conceivable that Republicans could ever win a race, ever. That's just political immaturity. There are kindergartners who grasp that, you know, grasp that concept.
Oh, she didn't just imply that. She said that as much in the interview. She said that the Republicans can't win on the merits, so the only way they can do it is by making sure that people they don't want to vote don't get to the polls. She also said there's been no shred of evidence of voter fraud. So all these cases of Acorn executives being prosecuted around the country are apparently just a fiction of our imagination. So way to go, Debbie. Way to go. Jim, have a great weekend.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Monday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.